Travis, I understand you have a terrific story for us to open the show today.
Sure. There's a type of hacking that's increasing, apparently, called salami attacks or salami slicing attacks. The way that this works is that people will break into several bank accounts all at once, sometimes hundreds, sometimes thousands, and then take away, siphon off very, very, very small and unnoticeable amounts of money out of these accounts.
So we're talking like 25 cents or what?
Yeah, it can be 25 cents. It can be a dollar. And to be fair, this is a type of scam or hack that's been around for decades. It was a major plot point in the movie Office Space. It was also that they even referenced this in Office Space, a plot point in Superman 2. Not the more recent one with Ben Affleck, but the one with Richard Pryor and Christopher Reeve.
What? What are the references? So what is it?
It's something where you are just taking little tiny amounts of currency and funneling it into a larger account, but you're taking it from several different sources all at once. So it's not noticeable, but it's noticeable enough once it starts to accumulate.
Adam, isn't this just like the 749 whatever thing?
984. But yes, okay. It's very much like that. There was a scam several years ago where people would hit accounts, generally cellular phone accounts, for $9.84. They were called gray charges. And they were hoping that people wouldn't notice $9.84 because most people generally don't pay attention to anything under at least two digits, so $10 and up. So this kind of sounds like an offshoot of that.
Right. And one of the things about it that's making it more feasible or easier for scammers to do is that in this day and age, we have a lot more things coming out of our bank accounts automatically. If you have like an app that's billing you a dollar a month, you're not really going to notice that. If you have 10 apps that are billing you 50 cents, a dollar, what have you, on a regular basis, it's a lot harder for people to notice, especially if you have something like Acorns, the investment app that just adds a couple of extra cents to invest in the stock market, what have you. It's a lot easier for this type of scam just to be hiding in plain sight at present. But the other thing about it that I thought was interesting is scammers are also apparently using brute force attacks with this, connecting to your bank account. What they can do is try to connect through just entering in random or at least targeted bank account and routing numbers and seeing which one works, putting a penny or two into that account. And as soon as they have confirmation, like, okay, this connection was successful, then they will start siphoning the money out of that.
And we're talking literally about cents or dollars or what is it?
Both, either. It depends on the scammer. It depends on how greedy they are.
Do you have any examples of like specific things that have happened?
There is a phishing scam that was noticed actually in, I believe, in India pretty recently, where what they were seeing was it was credential phishing, but they would also be following up with that with the salami attack.
And the salami attack was specifically a small amount of money that was getting siphoned out of your account.
Right. In that case, it was just them being greedy because it was meant to be a lead up to, say, malware distribution, ransomware distribution. But they kind of felt like as long as they were getting those credentials, they're able to just say like, OK, as long as we're here, let's also turn this into a means of getting a little bit of extra money before leading up to a full scale ransomware attack.
Yeah, kind of. Why not? You know, yeah. Hey, because it's opportunity. And these one thing we know about threat actors is they are real opportunists.
Travis, is there any way that our listeners can protect themselves against this salami slice attack?
Yeah, I think one of the easiest ways is just to set up a couple of different checking accounts or bank accounts for yourself. If you're going to have one account that is constantly getting little tiny bits extracted from it for Netflix, Disney Plus, Acorns, or take your pick. Keeping that aside from your main financial account, just because if that's something that you're putting in a small amount in every month, you're not necessarily protecting that amount of it, but you're minimizing the damage there. And that's, as we know, one of the three M's.
And an analogy here would also be where you have networks in your home and you put your kids on one network and you on another, just so that you want to be careful because children can be real explorers when it comes to the internet, and you don't necessarily want them clicking on links or opening attachments that might involve kid-related stuff.
Right. So I guess the way to put it is the best defense is to pre-slice your own salami or turkey or bread or cheese. I don't know why they picked salami, but, you know, just.
And this is not necessarily cutting edge information we're giving people here.
Oh. But, you know, it is a bit like this network thing that you're saying, Adam. But at the same time, what a pain in the butt to set up a separate bank account for this.
It can be. And it depends on your app or your bank or your credit union, because in some cases you're able to set aside, say, your Christmas fund or a tax fund or something like that. You can just do the same thing with your app fund, for instance.
Oh, I have a thought. You know, with my Adam, you taught me this. With my older child, I have a credit card that I've given her a shared card on, but I can actually limit the amount of money that goes out on her specific card in that account.
What's interesting, though, is that there are many financial institutions that don't do that, because I've tried that on a couple occasions, and some will say, yes, you can limit the amount that someone can charge on a credit card, and some basically say no. So it really, you have to ask your institution if they let you do it, but it's important to do it.
But it might be a way around it. Now I'm just going to be thinking constantly. There's this Russian guy who does parkour tricks, and I became friends with him online, and now I give him $1 a month, you know, on Patreon, because I think he's cool. And you're right. I probably have 20 of those right now.
Mm-hmm. But another
and,
way,
and it's a lot to keep track of.
Another way to approach this, though, is also just sign up for transactional alerts from your institution that notify you anytime there's activity in your account. And then you have to be an adult about this. You have to look and make sure that what you see is what you expect to see, and it's not a surprise.
Yeah, no, I had one of those this weekend. I was sitting on my front porch, and up popped two charges from JetBlue, one for $30 and one for $40 on my debit card. And I never use my debit card. My debit card hasn't been used once. So my number somehow got out there because I confirmed with my bank that it was my debit card that was used, and it was used. Now, to their credit, they refunded the money within an hour and they closed down the card. But you don't know that these things are happening unless you have transaction alerts set up.
And a lot of banks actually condition their response on how quickly you notify them that you see something that doesn't make sense. However, I thought I was allowed to use your JetBlue card.
I knew it was you. I knew it. No. And you really, honestly, if you do it again, I'm going to start using your American Airlines account.
Oh, well, all right. Now that is a threat that does disturb me. Hi, I'm Adam Levin, ringmaster of this glorious three-ring cyber circus that we call What the Hack.
And I'm Bo Friedlander, cybermensch, reader, writer, thinker about all things hackerific.
And I'm Travis Taylor, and by Adam's description, I guess that would make me the cyber bear on a unicycle.
But, you know, when we're really on the subject of setting up, you know, separate accounts for small charges, you know, one big problem that we face in this country is that we don't educate our people well enough, early enough, to be responsible cyber citizens. So our guest today, with a very interesting story, is Jennifer. We are protecting her last name at the moment to protect the innocent, but Jennifer, where are you from?
I'm from the Indianapolis area in Indiana.
Go Colts.
Go Colts.
So what is it you do?
I manage an oral surgery office on the northeast side of the city.
What's that like?
Every day is a new adventure, Adam. It's very interesting. I've actually been at the same office for the last 16 years. And
wow.
It's because every day is different from the last. So the patients are very different. The technology in oral surgery, believe it or not, has advanced, you know, tremendously, even in just the time that I've been here. So it's pretty cool.
So are we talking about people getting like new grills, or like, are we talking about teeth, or like the whole jaw? I mean, what do you do? Like everything?
It's mainly wisdom teeth extractions, dental implants, bone grafts, oral biopsies, From time to time, we have occasion to see patients with facial fractures or jaw fractures. So
grills, but grills, lots of grills.
Grills is a different area of dentistry.
Adam, before you jump in, because I know you have a ton of questions, I have one question. I have to ask it. I can't help. In the interest of science and Darwinian stuff, are people having fewer wisdom teeth these days? I feel like, you know, I've been alive now for a long time. And when I was a kid, people had wisdom teeth, but they don't anymore, right? We've evolved out of having wisdom teeth. So people only have like one or two.
Our patients still have plenty of wisdom teeth.
No way.
That's kind of our bread and butter usually. But so it's not been our experience that fewer people are having fewer wisdom teeth. But every once in a while, we do see, you know, patients just with, you know, one or two, or sometimes we see patients with six or eight.
So what?
Yeah, six, right? You can have extra wisdom
that's
teeth.
Awesome. Now, that makes me think they're sharks, but I asked because I only had one real one, another one that was sort of okay, and then I had this little tiny teensy one that was sort of shaped like, I don't know, a toothpick. It wasn't even really a tooth. I still have it. It's super cool. But anyway, enough about me.
So 16 years. Okay, so clearly you've taken root at this practice. Sorry, I couldn't help myself on that.
Yeah.
I had to throw that out there. But it's fascinating. I mean, I need implants that I'm hiding from, but I realize that I must face reality and do this or else I will have no teeth because they will all crack. But it's a fascinating area, and more people are getting implants, and apparently the process is getting less expensive because, you know, there have been advances made. So
I have a question for you. Jennifer, which is, is your story today in some way related to oral surgery?
No, it's actually completely, it's on the personal side.
Oh.
So yeah, completely unrelated.
So,
well, all right, let's hear it.
Let me hear what this is. Yeah, I mean, I was expecting some very crazy story about somebody buying a Corvette with their oral surgery money.
No, I mean, you know, I hope to be there one day, but this is actually a story regarding my son. He was 16 at the time that our family, by way of his activity, experienced bank fraud.
Whoa.
He had just had, I think, probably his first job, first debit card. And we, you know, handed him the debit card and said, okay, be very careful with your transactions. Don't overdraw your account or you're paying your own fees. Now go be, you know, experienced and enjoy this card. And he actually ended up, I mean, it was a learning experience for all of us, including my husband and I. Received a text message when he was at school one day, and the text message said, hey, this is your bank. We need to verify some activity on your account. If you would please give us a call at this number.
And they said, hey, do you think they said, hey, like, hey, hey,
you know, they most likely did. And I mean, he fell right for it.
Oh man.
You know, they're speaking his language. And so he called them immediately because he was, you know, sucked in immediately and verified a whole bunch of information, who he was, where he lived, his login credentials for his online banking.
Okay.
And his PIN number for his debit
social
card.
Did he include a social security number in that mix?
He did indicate that he did not give them his social security number. So,
nice. That's good news.
Yeah. So, and we've been monitoring that ever since this happened. So they said, okay, well, sounds like everything's in order. Thanks so much for calling. You know, take care. We're good to go. You can just keep doing your thing. And I believe that was maybe like a Thursday or Friday. It was right before winter break for him at school. And the following Wednesday, which was December the 27th, 2017, actually our family was in the car heading over to see The Last Jedi. Perhaps you guys are Star Wars.
Of course, 100 times. Yeah. Yes.
And he received a phone call from the bank saying, hey, we just need to verify some activity on your account. And he said, okay, yeah, sure. So he just wants to apparently verify with anybody who calls him.
Same bank.
I'm sorry?
Same bank or bank with quotes?
It was the actual bank.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they said, have you been to Chicago lately? And he said, no, I've been with my family for winter break. And they said, okay, well, because, you know, we see that there are these debit card transactions and now your account is seriously overdrawn.
When we say serious, do we mean like Corvette serious or do we mean like dinner and a show serious?
More like dinner and a show serious. Okay. Maybe not even that much. Okay. But serious to a 16-year-old.
Right.
And serious enough that they, you know, identified some weird activity and called like the actual bank, contacted him. And so after the movie was over, because of course we couldn't miss Jedi movie.
Certainly not.
Certainly not. We went over to our local bank branch and they let us know that there had been some suspicious activity, in particular, some checks that had been deposited via ATM. And then immediately funds were withdrawn against those checks. And so eventually, you know, through a series of conversations, you know, we obviously told him right from the jump that we had not, or he had not been the person performing those transactions. Eventually it was discovered, which I think they, you know, kind of expected at that point, the checks that had been deposited via ATM were fraudulent. They were payroll checks that were, you know, just, they were nothing. Ultimately his account, I think it ended up being like less than $450 overdrawn. So again, not even a giant amount of money to him. It was huge. And they asked him, you know, what's happened? You know, have you shared your information with anyone? And he did disclose the information that he had shared with air quotes bank. And as soon as he indicated to them that he had shared his PIN number, their demeanor, like their whole posture just immediately changed. And they said, oh, interesting. Because when you share your PIN number with anyone else, if they take money from you, you're on the hook for it. Like those transactions are not insured by anything. You basically just give, you just give up all rights to any recourse that you would have.
Well, one thing that I've noticed with certain banks, depending upon the length of your relationship and the size of the money that you deposit in the bank, that you might still get some form of reprieve from them. But it's really, you need to know the bank well, and they need to, shall we say, value your patronage. And any bank that doesn't do that for a young person, I think they really need to rethink their customer service policy. I say this as a former consumer affairs director for a state, but...
So you're saying that the bank should have been like, look, this guy is going to be with our bank for a gazillion years.
Right.
Let's give him the $450.
Yeah. It's like, we'll give him a pass on this. You know, there are some major tech companies that if you, shall we say, overplay your welcome when it comes to video games and things, that they'll give you one pass because their attitude is they would really like to keep you as a customer.
This spring, get out there, enjoy the weather, and recapture the magic of riding a bike with Electric e-bike.
With an amazing variety of models built for riders of all abilities, it's never been easier to fall in love with riding again. Plus, every electric e-bike ships free and only requires quick, toolless assembly.
This is my first ever e-bike, and the experience has just been great. I was a little bit intimidated at first because I hadn't gone biking in a while, but the 500-watt motor that the electric e-bike comes with really gives you a nice little boost, especially if you're trying to go uphill or pick up some speed.
Data shows that e-bike riders take their bike out more often. That means You get more exercise, more exploration, and wait for it, fresh air.
And riding an e-bike isn't like, it's not cheating. It's just making it possible for you to be out there longer on each ride. And speaking of things going a little slower, you can finance electric e-bike for as little as $49 a month.
Get into spring with electric e-bikes, the number one selling e-bikes in the nation. Get your adventure started at electricebikes.com and please mention that What the Heck with Adam Levin sent you in the post-checkout survey.
That's electricebikes.com.
So Bo and Adam, you guys know I'm a bit of a privacy geek, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, totally. I really just don't like the idea that just about anyone can find you online, can find out where you live or your email address or your phone number or anything. I just think that entire idea is super creepy.
There's so much of my data already out there, but is there something that you can do?
Yeah, actually, you can use Delete Me. Delete Me is a service that pretty much does the heavy lifting for you, where they go to all the data brokers that they have on file and just pull your data and delete it on a regular basis.
I use it. I like it. And they make it quick, easy, and safe to remove your personal data online.
Well, yeah, with these data brokers, they can accumulate huge amounts of your personally identifiable information. And if all that information gets into the hands of a bad actor, that opens you up to a lot of risk.
And if you act now, you can get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/WTH and use promo code WTH. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/WTH and enter promo code WTH at checkout.
That's joindeleteme.com/WTH, promo code WTH, which stands for What the Heck. And we thank you for supporting Delete Me and What the Heck.
All right. So that, is there more to this story? What else happened? When the bank said, oh, I see. So you did the soccer equivalent of an own goal. You gave them your PIN code. They took your money. It's the same thing as actually giving them your $20 bill out of your wallet from their point of view, I guess.
After that, what we did, obviously filled out a bunch of paperwork, listed all the transactions that we found to be fraudulent. Uh-huh. And they did their investigation. Because our son had disclosed his PIN number, they really did tell us that their hands were tied and that there was nothing that they could really do for us. And we did have a newer relationship with that bank. We had like our family accounts were there. My husband and I both had checking accounts with that bank. We had our savings account. So it wasn't just like that, that our son's account was the only account. It was, much more substantial than just, the $450 that we were talking about at that time. And so a guy from the fraud department, from the fraud investigations department called. He said that they had video of the man depositing the fraudulent checks and withdrawing the funds against those fraudulent checks. Our son's bank statement even had the address of the ATM listed on it.
Right.
They basically told us that because it was such a small amount of money to them, they weren't going to pursue things any further. So in order to keep, as far as identifying the individuals that had, perpetrated the fraud, in order for my husband and I to keep our accounts in good standing with the bank, we had to settle the negative balance from our own accounts.
Is this a big bank or a small bank?
It's a decent sized bank.
So if we were watching The Simpsons, would it be Springfield Bank or would it be?
I think it would be a bigger bank.
Okay.
I think you would recognize. Yeah. If you heard the name, I think you would recognize that.
Hmm. I sure. Feel like they didn't do the right thing here.
Yeah.
It was short-sighted on their part and it was not fair to you guys. Especially, it's one thing if you're talking about somebody in their 30s and 40s, 50s, they say, come on now, the way the world mm-hmm. works. This is a 16-year-old boy. I mean, it's kind of like, give him a break. It's,
You know? Especially if they're saying that the that they're not going to give you any kind of mercy in terms of the money coming out of the account, but it's also such a small amount that they're not going to bother to try to pursue that any further. That's sort of a 1-2 punch right there.
Yeah, no, it feels like, I mean, I'm older. I mean, I'm thoroughly Gen X. And to me, it just feels like some mean millennial kind of attitude. Like, well, I don't really care enough to research this. Sorry, you millennials out there who may not
beating
be
beating
like
up
this.
On the millennials.
Can't
again,
help it, man. There, so listen, I'm just saying, like, it's like, I'm not going to work on this. And also, like, you owe me the money, but I can't be bothered.
No, the magic words are, my hands are tied. It's
my
like,
hands
no.
are tied.
Actually,
it's a bank. They don't have any hands.
Someone said that's why they're called bankers and not entrepreneurs. But this does bring to mind, though, one of the pieces of advice that we give people, the three of us, and that is especially when you're dealing with a young person. And I know the normal inclination of a parent is to have a bank account and give them a debit card that. You may want to think about the possibility of not a debit card, but rather a credit card, one that you monitor. Especially now, you can sign up for transaction alerts that notify you of any activity in the account. You can do that with your bank, too. But also, it has to do with the level of protections that are available. Because with a credit card, remember, it's their money. With a debit card, it's your money. You have much more time with a credit card. They generally have a zero liability policy these days. Used to be $50. It's now pretty much zero liability. It just gives way more protection, way more time. And also, you know, if you say, okay, well, this is a kid and I'd like to have him or her understand money management better. And one of it is you can only spend what's in your bank account and that's it. But with a credit card, it's just sort of like be an adult. Look at your credit card balances on a daily basis or sign up for transaction alerts. And at least you are better protected and the family is better protected. So you wouldn't have to go through a situation like this with a credit card.
I know. But, you know, Adam, if you're going to say like snap your fingers and be an adult, that doesn't really work with a kid because they're not adults.
Well, then manage the account with them.
Yeah, well, so here's what my question was going to be. You know, I know you do this, Adam, because when we met 1,000 years ago, we did have the talk. You sat me down and we had the talk.
Right.
And it helped tremendously. I tell you something, having somebody who knows their way around credit and finance is a wonderful thing. And for most kids, that's us, right? It's the parents who like we know a little bit about finance and money. And it sounds like you did have the talk with him. What I'm curious about is like, okay, so if the bank, I'm stuck on this bank, if they didn't want to help, they didn't want to look into it because it was such a small amount of money, did they have a program where they could help your kid get better acquainted with proper hygiene on banking? Or was it just like, see you later, bye?
It was just basically see you later, bye.
Man.
Because when they said you have to, you as his parents need to settle his negative balance in order to keep your accounts in good standing with the bank.
I hate that.
I did express to them that if that was something that they were going to require of us, then we would not feel comfortable continuing our family's banking relationship with them.
Well done.
And they said, well, how about this? We'll credit you the $45 in return fees, and then you can pay the rest of the money, and then we'll be good, right?
What?
And
you were like,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. I was like, man, that's almost even a little more of a slap in the face.
Yeah.
So they
clearly did not understand the concept of customer service.
Yeah.
Or customer retention. I would have been so out of there. Let me ask you a question. Are you still banking with them?
Oh, heavens no.
Excellent.
No. We bailed pretty much. Actually, we settled the account beginning of January in 2018. Let everything kind of, you know, let all the stuff kind of settle out and return to a zero balance. And then we moved all of our accounts over to another large bank. And actually, when I went to the other large bank, because we've been thinking about moving to them, some of our family members, actually, many of our family members bank with this institution and have for years. I met with the banker there, and my first question was, so how do you guys handle fraud? And they were like, oh, there's the story. What do you mean? So, and, you know, we've had, thankfully, no issues with fraud. I mean, there have been sometimes where they've caught some funky activity, but thankfully it's never risen to the level that, you know, there've been any issues to the magnitude with it.
Now, Adam's going to have a whole list of what he calls the 3 M's type things for you to do. But I before he gets to that, right? I know you have that, Adam. Am I right? I'm right. For sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but before we go there, I am wondering if there is, like, now in your head, Jennifer, a talk. Now, I gave my kids both have a card and full, you know, and they use it, and it is an institution where I can put a limit on it. And, but I told them, you know, what you told them, this is essentially cash. You know, this is a convenient way for you to pay for things, but at the end of the month, you got to settle up every month, and they don't really do it, and it's a point of contention, but at least they kind of understand it. But when it comes to fraud, what would your mom of that 16-year-old, before it happened, knowing what you know now, say? How would you deal with it?
I think the first thing I would say is never give your PIN number to anyone.
That's a good one.
Never verify any of your information anyone, unless you look up the phone number for the bank yourself on your app and you call them directly and say, hey, I got the text message that you needed to verify some of my account information, and verify that with them as needed.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think too, I've listened to enough of your podcast episodes that, you know, I would just say that you really can't trust anyone that you don't have a good relationship with.
I just got back from France, and there was a lot of stuff I couldn't stream because I was in the wrong region. But using NordVPN, I was able to stream everything.
I use NordVPN too, but it's more to protect my private data, like bank details, passwords, and online identity. There are a million trackers online that are just sort of watching you, and NordVPN is a great way to get around those.
NordVPN can switch your virtual location, allowing you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price.
If you're traveling and you're using public Wi-Fi, NordVPN can protect you wherever you are.
It's not just that. NordVPN also comes with threat protection, which helps protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites.
NordVPN is the fastest VPN in the world, and it'll only set you back the price of a cup of coffee a month.
To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/WTHack.
And hey, there's no risk. It's a 30-day money-back guarantee.
Check the link in the podcast description. Well, first of all, congratulations on having wonderful taste and that you like all the stuff that you've heard on the show and you're putting it into use in your life. But first, like I did before, that was first, actually. Second, I did want to say there's one thing I noticed in your story that we didn't touch on that is important. And it is that first call came to your son when he was at school. And I have no idea, and there's no way to know if the scammers knew that he was young and that he was going to be in school at that time. But the thing that I try to bear in mind at all times is, no matter what I'm doing, whether I'm holding 3 wedding cakes, one on my head and one in each hand, I have to be aware of the fact that I may not be aware of the fact that I'm being targeted. And scammers are looking for that moment when I'm not paying attention.
That's actually one of the questions I had that I don't think we're going to come to the answer for here. But how they knew to target your son exactly. But that might suggest either, maybe your son was just giving out other information of some sort, but it's entirely possible that there's someone at the bank that was a little bit less than on the level that was helping provide the target.
Creepy.
I don't know. It's not quite so common with banks, but right now for mobile service providers, that is a huge vector for attack, which is people who work for the company supplying access to scammers to SIM swapping.
Adam, what do you think of that? That's
no, I've heard of that, sort of the insider threat. The other thing is that a lot of these folks who are scammers follow people on social media.
Oh, right.
And
is your son on social media, Jennifer?
He is. Yeah, he is to a limited extent. I think he...
Are you on social media?
Yes. We're on different social medias because I'm on Facebook and he's too young for Facebook, apparently. he's more Snapchat, Instagram,
TikTok.
Those types of things.
See, a lot of these situations occur because parents are on social media and people follow different people on social media. I mean, for instance, what does your husband do?
He is in software sales.
Software. All right. So software sales. So sometimes that they're not necessarily going after someone. They're going after the people that that particular person is affiliated with or people that it's not even for those people. It's for the place where they work. And so a scammer will start with what they think is the weakest link and they'll start to move up the chain. And oh, by the way, if they can also nail some money along the way, they like that as well.
That is so the thing. It's like they could have been going after your husband for all we know, but they were like, oh, look at this kid. Oh, look, $400. I'll take it.
Well, no, and I'll give you another thing, too. They possibly, not to create paranoia, but they possibly could have come after you. Why? Because you work in a medical provider's office.
Ooh, with lots of expensive procedures.
Yep. And lots of patients. I'll give you sort of the ultimate scary example is hackers got into the network of a plastic surgeon in Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. And they not only put ransomware on the network and try to extract a fee essentially for going away, but they then also said, what's it worth to you for us not to release the data on your patients? And then after that, and they got paid, they went after the patients individually and said, what is it worth it for us not to publish before and after pictures of your plastic surgery?
Damn.
And then they got some of the patients to pay. So again, both of you work in situations that would be very interesting to scammers and hackers.
All right. You've scared everybody to death, Adam. Thank you. Can we be a part of the solution for a second here? And what are, Adam, the things that can help? What's the talk look like nowadays?
The question is, does either your practice or your husband's company offer as part of employee benefits cyber protection or identity theft protection programs?
I know that mine does not. I can't speak for my husband's. I don't know.
Yeah, because a lot of times companies now, as part of their employee benefits programs, offer help to people. So in a situation like if his company offered it, then you would have had a professional working with you from the beginning.
Yeah, and that professional might have said, like, when they were like, we're not going to pay this, they would have maybe helped you with that. But
yeah, so, these are programs that are available. But that's the third M. The first M is really, how do you minimize your risk of exposure, reduce your attackable surface? And for the whole family and for your kids, it's long and strong passwords or use a password manager. Don't share passwords across your universe of accounts or websites. Use two-factor authentication where you can. This is where you start to log in somewhere and then a code comes to your phone, a trusted device. And there are also new ways like Google Authenticators and Auth and several other ways that are the second factor of authentication. Third is the big rule, which you yourself said, never authenticate yourself to anyone who contacts you. I don't care who they are. Immediately get the information and contact the institution or that particular person, if it's somebody you know, and just even something as simple as an e-card could be the pathway in for a hacker into your home network, because you click on the link saying, oh, this is lovely. Grandma sent us an e-card, but it wasn't grandma.
If you don't like e-cards, it's a really good way to make them stop because my cousin sends them to me. Sorry, Jonathan. And I don't love them. Sorry, Jonathan. But, he stopped because every time he sends one, I say, Jonathan, did you send me this e-card? And he got tired of it.
But it's like it's a buzzkill, but it's a protective device so you don't get killed.
Yeah.
Also, don't download every app in the world because it's new and cool and whatever. Go to a legitimate app store, read reviews, freeze your credit and freeze your children's credit, which you now can do. And it's free based on an amendment to the banking law that was passed a couple of years ago. So that's really the first M. The second M is monitor, which means get credit reports, look at them, pay particular attention to what you didn't do, as opposed to things that you did. Track your credit scores to make sure they don't take a sudden precipitous drop. Sign up for transaction alerts from your institution so you know what's going on in your bank account, your credit card accounts. Look for, now as a someone who works in a medical provider's office, whenever you get a explanation of benefit statement from your health insurer, just take a look to make sure that it was really you or your kids or your husband that was really there, as opposed to someone else who took information from the family and used it as a way to get medical treatment or crawl into their medical insurance. This happens. Medical identity theft is a serious problem and it's growing. Also, more sophisticated forms of monitoring that have what's called the me, not me notification, which is not, I'm a bank security guy and the bank is being broken into, as opposed to I want to stop the bank from being broken into in the first place. So it notifies you sort of contemporaneously with somebody applying for credit. Dark web monitoring is important. And then the third M, which we talked about, was managing the damage, which is many insurance companies, financial institutions, as well as HR departments where you work, offer programs to help people with whom they have a relationship get through an identity incident. And sometimes it's free and sometimes it's discounted.
And leave your bank if they don't give you your money back. That's, for me, that's the big hoo-ha lesson. It was great to hear your story today. And I think the reason it helped me personally was to hear how you navigate finance with your kid, because it is not easy. There is no easy answer to getting a young person to understand the red light, green light of identity theft. But the PIN code story is definitely going to stay with me, because that one is a very good example of what not to do.
Travis, any summation you'd like to give us here on what we've been talking about?
A statistic came out recently saying that millennials and younger are now a bigger target for scams like this than the elderly, who previously were the most commonly targeted sector. There are a few reasons for it. In a lot of cases, the elderly people with grandparent scams and the like did not grow up with technology. So they may have made a few errors here and there, might not have been quite as cyber aware. But with the younger generations, they're the ones that have grown up with technology and are used to oversharing and are used to just sort of trusting and providing that information out there. So that is right now easily the biggest and easiest target for scammers.
Yeah. And one thing, the one tip that I have is this. Whenever I get a phishing text, a vishing text, or any kind of hack that comes my way, and I get a lot of them because I respond to them, I like to play with hackers, I show them to my kids. And so now my kids send them to me and they go, look at this stupid fisher who sent me this stupid thing. And they know what it looks like. So I think, you know, when you do have someone come at you, and we all know what these hacks look like, show them to your kids. Let them get to know what they look like and make it into a game, like, so that they can show you, like, oh, this, I saw one too. And oh, aren't they stupid? You know, and on we go with our life, having not clicked the link, having not had a problem.
Jennifer, we really appreciate you taking time to come and talk to us about this. Again, we call this the shame-free zone, because we want people to tell stories, because the only way that we learn and other people learn is by sharing the experience and hearing others share the experience. And it's kind of putting a North Star for everyone. So we really, really appreciate it. Thank you very much for joining us.
Certainly. I appreciate the opportunity, guys.
Thanks, Jennifer.
What the Hack is a Loudtree Media production in partnership with Large Media. That's L-A-R-J Media. You can find What the Hack wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to follow us on social media and find additional information at adamlevin.com.